Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE.
Finding the right balance of online and offline learning to have in its portfolio is one of the critical concerns facing learning businesses in our post-pandemic world, because getting that mix as close to ideal as possible is key to securing a learning business's reach, revenue, and impact.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Finding balance is a recurrent theme for me and for many. There's the much talked of life-work balance. There's the balance between strategic deep thinking and operational get it done time. There's the balance of effort and time for rest.
And then in the learning business world, there's also the balance of online and offline offerings. And that's what we want to focus on in this episode, number 415. We know from conversations with learning business leaders, observation of what's going on, and our own experience offering both online and offline experiences, that cracking the nut of the right mix of online and off in a portfolio isn't easy.
And while balancing online and off has been an issue ever since online learning took off, the trickiness of balancing the two has become even trickier post-pandemic. On top of that, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer to the right balance. Some organizations are back to pre-COVID attendance at their in-person education and conferences. Others are struggling to get folks to attend in person, and in the meantime, losing money on food and beverage and hotel room blocks and all of that in the meantime.
Yeah, so it's probably worth laying a foundation here with some of that context that surrounds this now before we take a closer look at how you might balance things. So, I mean, first of all, we did see that tremendous shift to online learning during COVID-19. It was obviously already there, but for folks who had not gone fully into that world, it really kind of forced the shift for learners and for learning businesses.
Right. And so even holdouts, whether on the learning side or on the learning business side, even those folks who maybe hadn't tried or spent much time with online learning suddenly were essentially forced to buy into online learning and to try it out. And if they wanted to learn, that was pretty much the only option for a time.
Some organizations got caught out, that they didn't really have the technology in place. Maybe they had some basic sort of infrastructure, but when it came time to, you know, really get serious about offering online learning, they needed to either put an LMS in place or come up with better ways to handle the technology end of things. So a lot of organizations, a lot of learning businesses were really scrambling.
And because of that scrambling, sometimes the quality of the offerings wasn't always of the highest caliber.
That's putting it politely.
But there was a lot of leniency for a time. I think learners were hungry for connection, hungry to continue learning. And so if the option was maybe something slightly less buttoned up and perfect online, they were sort of willing to go with it. I think, though, we are now past that point of learner leniency.
That's right. And we're also at a point of kind of a return to in-person learning. We no longer had the restrictions that were preventing that during the COVID time. So we know many organizations are returning to face-to-face events, and some are struggling with that. Some aren't getting the attendance levels that they used to, which is something that, that's part of what sparked this conversation, is how to actually navigate that. They're really, you know, varying levels of experience. Some are seeing a complete return to those pre-COVID levels.
Or even higher.
Even higher, because people we're so eager to get back together. But then others are finding that, well, our audience discovered that online learning, you know, actually works, and we're going to have to do more with it going forward.
Right. And so in terms of returning to in-person, there are some of what are perceived as benefits to in-person or things that can be done better in-person, like networking, like hands-on experiences, potentially experiences that really yield deeper engagement. There's certainly a bias towards thinking that those are better handled in-person. But in-person tends to come with sort of higher costs, kind of more logistical issues, and potentially ongoing health concerns for some attendees, you know, around what it means at this point to gather in one room with many other people.
Right. And another factor that I feel like there was more of a buzz about maybe a few years ago than I hear now. Maybe it's still out there and I'm just not hearing it as much, but just the environmental concerns, holding green meetings. There's so much air travel, so much waste that goes on with in-person meetings. So those are among the challenges, the potential downsides of in-person.
So that's a little bit of kind of the background and the context. You know, we had COVID pushing everything online for a period. Now that in-person is a viable option again, this question of what is the right balance, what's the right mix between online and off is really just bubbling up, and we hear a lot about it. And so what we wanted to offer is 9 criteria that your learning business might be thinking about when you're trying to decide what is that right mix. So we're going to offer these 9 criteria and some guiding questions. And you can use this essentially like a rubric. There can be kind of a rating for each criteria, and that can yield an overall score. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after we get through the criteria.
And we should note at the beginning too that, of course, we always have a transcript. We have a, you know, show notes page for our podcast episode. So listen now, absorb what you can of this, but then you will have that as a point of reference, something you can use for your own review, or we love for you to use these types of resources as a discussion item, as a social learning object with your team, with your staff, with your organization. So we'll start off with criteria 1, which is audience preferences, behaviors, and needs. And we've got that P word, preferences, in there. So we're going to be careful about how we handle that one. We often hear from organizations, we went out and asked them, what do they prefer in terms of, you know, in this case, online versus face-to-face. And of course, you often can't trust stated preferences.
That's right. So some of the guiding questions here are, you could ask, what are the preferences of our target audience for this offering? Again, as Jeff, you just said, that preference, though, is going to be not totally reliable. So you also want to make sure that you're either asking about behaviors or that you're actually observing behavior. So you can ask them, how many online offerings have you completed in the past 12 months, or how many in-person events have you completed in the last 12 months? So there are ways to sort of get at not preference, but actual behavior.
And this is a big part of what we do when we survey. We're really trying to get at those behaviors, or what might be referred to as exhibited preferences. So things that, as you said, Salisa, that we can observe, we can see that they've done this, not that we're asking them, this is what they prefer.
And so often here, you're going to also want to be asking, have we conducted surveys or have we gathered feedback that will tell us about the behaviors and the preferences? And then importantly, when have you gathered that data and that feedback? Because I really feel like at this point, pre-pandemic data is of limited use.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a big flag to a lot of organizations that the last time you did this kind of surveying was pre-pandemic. It's time to go back out again.
And then, you know, related to this idea of exhibited preferences, you can also look at what data you have around past attendance and past engagement levels in your online offerings compared to your offline offerings.
So, you know, you might be doing a rating scale sort of thing. We know our friend Will Talheimer does not like these types of scales, but we...
Likert scales.
Likert scales, yeah. But we do find them useful in certain instances, and we think they're useful in this instance. So you could do a 1 to 5 scale just with your own sort of check on this. What are strong exhibited preferences for online? What are, you know, moderate preferences for online? Neutral or mixed preference? Moderate preference for offline? Strong preference for offline? And engaging, you know, to what degree do you see the behavior exhibited across that spectrum?
Right. So you ended up, you sort of simplified and said preference, but we're really meaning that exhibited preference.
Right,
so really trying to look at past behavior as much as possible. And then those five kind of categories that you just ticked off, Jeff, those essentially then have numerical ratings from 1 to 5. And the numerical rating will be important when we come to the end and are looking at using this kind of as a rubric, using these different scores on criteria for that. But the second criteria has to do with content alignment. And so the guiding questions you want to be asking here are, is the content highly interactive or hands-on, requiring or certainly indicating a desire for face-to-face interaction?
And then, you know, along with that, can the content be effectively delivered through digital means such as a webinar or a self-paced e-learning module or other types of typical online delivery?
And so again, then, you know, you would use those guiding questions to assess that content that you're trying to decide whether it would be offered online or off. And you can use, again, a 5-point rating scale. So 1 would be best suited for online. 2 is suitable for online, but might need some adaptation. 3 can be delivered in either format, so online or off. 4th, suitable for offline, but maybe with some adaptation. And then 5th, best suited for offline, or 5, I should say.
And I think it's important in this scale to challenge yourself a bit, because I think a lot of times we sort of default to, oh, that can't be done online. Well, think about it. Think about whether, if you could have the right adaptations, whether you might be able to deliver a valid and worthwhile learning experience for whatever objective you're trying to achieve online. And we should probably say too, as you're sort of applying these scales, these rubrics, this might be you as the head of your learning business thinking through these things. More likely, it might be a team sitting down and looking at these and saying, how do we sort of rate ourselves on these different scales?
And if you do it as a team, we recommend that you can be together and you can be walking through the criteria and the guiding questions, but we recommend that you let each person rate individually and then share those scores collectively. And then maybe you kind of come up with a group rating. But if you, especially as the learning business leader, state your preference, you say, well, I think this is clearly a 1, odds are that others on your team then might go, yeah, a 1. Whereas if you instead allow time and space for everyone to think and assess on their own, then you might actually find out, wow, we all have kind of different opinions. And then that could lead to some good discussion of why do some people feel like this is best suited for online and others feel like it's best suited for offline.
Yeah, and that's another, you know, of our, I guess you would call it a best practice around research. We already said, you know, we don't ask people to state their preferences because we just know we can't trust that. And whenever we're doing anything that's going to involve group input, which is often very valuable, we want to do everything we can to avoid groupthink and get people to do their individual thinking and document it before they come together as a group.
The third criteria has to do with resource allocation and cost. And so some of the guiding questions under this criterion are, what are the cost implications for online versus offline delivery? So you want to be thinking about venues and travel and accommodation versus technology infrastructure and digital content creation.
And then another one in this area is, what is the potential return on investment or ROI for each format? And of course, that may require doing a little forecasting, some financial projections. I'll, you know, point out here, this is one of those areas where if you can deliver it effectively online and the audience wants it online, that can be a great thing from a return on investment standpoint, because your margins, your incremental profits online are typically just going to be much higher than they're going to be with face-to-face.
And so then the rating scale for this criterion, again, 1 to 5. 1 could be online is significantly more cost effective. 2, online somewhat more cost effective. 3, the cost differences are minimal, sort of essentially the same cost to delivering it online versus offline. 4, offline is somewhat more cost effective. And then 5, offline is significantly more cost effective.
So 3 criteria so far. We've talked about preferences and behaviors. We've talked about content alignment as the second one. And we've talked about the third one as being resource allocation and cost. Criteria 4 is going to be technological infrastructure. And this is also a capacity question.
That's right. You know, 3 around resource allocation and cost, that falls under the capacity. This has to do with your human resources and what investment you might already have in place in some of your tools. 4 really puts the spotlight firmly on the technological infrastructure required for this. So again, that falls under that capacity domain that we talk about in the learning business maturity model. And some of the guiding questions here are, do we have the necessary technology and support to deliver high quality online learning experiences? And answering that question could actually point you to the need to invest in new or additional technology or additional support, for example.
And then another question, is our audience comfortable and proficient with the required technology? And I see organizations make a lot of assumptions there, maybe that their audience is not as technically proficient as they actually are. So avoid assumptions, make sure you truly find out. And our rating scale there is going to be 1, our technology supports an excellent online experience. 2, our technology supports a good online experience. 3, our technology supports online and offline equally. 4, our technology is mostly oriented to offline experiences. And then 5, our technology is only oriented to offline experiences.
At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more. And then the 5th criteria has to do with safety considerations. And we're thinking about safety relatively broadly here, but one of the guiding questions is around what are the current safety risks and how might they impact in-person events? And so we're thinking of things like weather. I know we heard recently from someone whose annual conference was in Houston when the tornadoes went through and several hotels in the area lost power and things like that. Luckily, didn't happen to impact their conference, but that's the kind of concern that you might need to take into account. There are also health concerns. Obviously, we started the episode talking about COVID-19. You know, if something like that happens again, there can be true risks to gathering in person. There might also be the potential for political unrest depending on where your in-person event is situated. So just being aware of the safety risks that bringing together a group of people to learn could potentially entail.
And then a question to go with that is, are there safety concerns among our audience? So are people tuned into any of these concerns? How much do they care about them? How much do we really need to be taking these into account? It's important to know.
And so the rating scale here, 1 to 5, 1, that there are significant safety concerns, which would favor online delivery. 2, some safety concerns that would favor online delivery. 3, minimal safety concerns, sort of essentially no safety concerns. So kind of either format would be feasible.
Then 4, some safety concerns favoring offline. And 5, significant safety concerns favoring offline. And, you know, some of the things we have in mind here with, you know, some or significant safety concerns is, for example, if you're running, say, labs that involve dangerous chemicals or that, you know, involve things like power tools or using electricity, things that really need to be supervised and monitored and guided properly. You don't want to just have an on-demand video saying, hey, try this welding tool out, you know, without having the right person there to support that. So those would favor offline circumstances.
So you have to kind of weigh your safety concerns because, to your point, Jeff, some safety concerns, like perhaps a pandemic, will point towards online. Other safety concerns, as you were saying, like with chemicals or power tools, might actually favor offline. So you'll need to kind of think particularly about your offering and where that points you in terms of where the safety risk is lowest.
So that was 5, safety concerns. Criteria 6 is engagement and networking opportunities. And a question you would ask here, one of them is, how important is face-to-face interaction for this particular course or conference or, you know, name your type of learning experience?
And then another guiding question is, can we replicate or can we even enhance those kinds of interactions using online tools and online strategies?
And I think this is another one where we need to stretch ourselves and think about what really is possible, both online and offline, in terms of the engagement and the networking, and not make any assumptions. I think we automatically make an assumption that more networking is going to happen offline. But I've recently been to conferences, and I know that, you know, there's a significant number of people there who may never talk to anybody the whole time they're there. But if they were in an online situation, they might actually have a lot of engagement, a lot of interaction. So we have to be thinking about those things. So rating scale here, 1, engagement or networking or easily replicated online. 2, engagement or networking somewhat replicable online. 3, engagement, networking equal in both formats.
4, engagement and networking somewhat better offline. And 5, engagement and networking somewhat better offline.
Significantly better.
Excuse me, offline. Significantly better offline, yes. So that's the 6 criteria. That brings us to 7, which has to do with accessibility and inclusivity. And guiding questions here include, which format makes the course or conference more accessible to a wider audience? And so you're going to be wanting to consider things like geographic reach, you're going to be wanting to consider disability accommodations, you want to consider time zone flexibility.
Yeah, and I mean, these are really important. You know, I'm on a board right now of an organization that has an international reach, and those geographic questions and also sort of socioeconomic questions that can go with them are big, because we offer programs that are relatively expensive and are tend to be geared towards sort of American and European audiences, but we have large constituencies in other parts of the world that may not be able to travel to the face-to-face versions of those events, may not be able to afford what we're charging for some of those events, but have a real need.
And so the rating scale for accessibility and inclusivity goes from 1, online is significantly more accessible, 2, online is somewhat more accessible, 3, accessibility is equal for both formats, 4, offline is somewhat more accessible, and 5, offline is significantly more accessible.
So that's accessibility and inclusivity, very important to keep very front of mind. And then criteria 8, maybe one of the ones that's closest to my heart, is learning outcomes and feedback, and thinking about those in the context of offline and online experiences. And so, key question here might be, how have learner outcomes and satisfaction levels differed between online and offline formats in the past? And hopefully this is something you know.
Right. And again, the past, though, probably needs to be a relatively short past.
That's true.
You might need to be looking at just post-pandemic numbers there to really get an accurate read, or as accurate a read as possible. And then even in what you said, Jeff, in that question, we sort of grouped outcomes and satisfaction levels together. Ideally, you're actually separating those out. You're really looking at learning outcomes differently than you're looking at satisfaction levels. Because I think we all know that you can sometimes get a very highly rated experience where people don't really actually go back with much to apply.
Right. There's the did you like it question, and then there's the did you actually learn anything assessment.
So you want to be looking at both, and we would say putting more weight on the outcomes rather than on the satisfaction level, on the smile sheet level of feedback.
Definitely. And then, related to that, what feedback have we received about that effectiveness of each format? And like you said, Salisa, we got to make sure we're not looking too far back on that.
And so the rating scale here is that 1, online consistently yields better outcomes. 2, online often yields better outcomes.
3, outcomes are similar in both formats. 4, offline often yields better outcomes. And 5, offline consistently yields better outcomes. And yet again, I'll say this is a place not to make assumptions. I think there still tends to be this bias that learning is going to happen better in offline environments, but there is substantial evidence that learning can be equal or even better in online environments. So you have to walk into this with that understanding.
And then the final criteria that we'll mention today is environmental impact. And Jeff, you mentioned near the beginning of our conversation, this idea of green meetings, which we felt like maybe have sort of heard more about in the past than we have of late. But in general, considering the environmental impact, we think is important for learning businesses to be doing. And so guiding questions are things like, what is the environmental impact of each format, meaning online versus offline? And so you're going to want to be looking at factors like carbon footprint and energy consumption and waste generation, you know, so how much trash are you producing?
And then, of course, ask, how can we minimize our environmental footprint while delivering high-quality educational offerings? And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but this is, again, not an area to make too many assumptions, because online is not necessarily off the hook totally when it comes to environmental impact. You know, a lot of server energy is required to be the backbone of the internet that's running all of these interactive experiences. That's becoming truer as AI becomes a bigger component of learning experiences. That said, probably in the balance, online is typically going to be more environmentally friendly, but you need to weigh it on our rating scale.
And so that ranges from one, online format has significantly lower environmental impact; two, online has somewhat lower environmental impact; three, the environmental impact is similar for both formats;
four, the offline format has somewhat lower environmental impact; and five, the offline format has significantly lower environmental impact. You know, and with number five in particular, I think if it's easy to get a group of people together sort of locally, not really have to do much to do it, like that's sort of a no-brainer in terms of environmental impact versus the amount of energy that might have to be expended with servers and everything else to stand up something online. But my guess is that's probably the exception more than the rule in this area.
So those are the nine criteria that we brought to the table today. If you use the scoring that we talked about with each question, then what you can do is sum up the scores for each to get a total. So if your total is in that 9 to 18 point range, that's going to be indicating online pretty strongly. 19 to 27, that's going to be kind of moderately favoring using an online format. The 28 to 36, that's kind of neutral or mixed, so probably either format could work. 37 to 45, that's going to be kind of a moderately leaning towards offline. And 46 to 54, that's going to be strongly favoring offering it offline.
And we'll stress that as with any rubric like this, your overall score probably shouldn't determine your choice. Judgment has to be applied, obviously, within your particular context. But it can point you in the right direction. And an approach like this gives you a structured way to think about this decision with others, discuss it with others that are involved in the decision, or even just on your own. It gives you that more structured way of thinking about it.
And we encourage you to make this your own, to adjust the criteria. Maybe not all nine of what we mentioned feel important or relevant to your learning business. Maybe there are others that you feel are missing and that you would want to add. And of course, you can also adjust the ratings along with the criteria to fit your learning business as much as possible and tailor this to your needs. Now, that rubric and those criteria that we just went through really speaks to making product by product decisions, perhaps product line by product line decisions. But beyond that, there's also just the question of the overall balance of online and offline offerings in a learning business's portfolio.
Yeah, so you want to, you know, evaluate your current balance of online versus offline offerings. You want to ensure that you've got a diverse mix that's going to meet the varied needs and behaviors and preferences of your audience.
And you're going to want to think about, what can you do to sort of make your approach as defensible and flexible as possible, so that if things change, if the situation changed, how might you be able to pivot quickly between formats? And I do think that's something that a lot of organizations did learn during COVID, you know, about how can we sort of take essentially the same materials and potentially deliver them through a series of online synchronous instructor-led sessions. We can also then do that in person when we are able to meet in person, but sort of thinking about, how do you develop in a way that allows you to sort of pivot as much as possible?
Yeah, and I mean, this is really, I think, the core value of content. The intellectual property, the sort of the stuff of any course, really in and of itself, well, we've had this discussion before, that it's kind of tending to or trending towards zero in terms of market value. It's really the experience that you put around that content. And when you're talking about, you know, offline versus online, you're structuring different experiences, and you can do that around the same body of content. And just depending on choices you make and instructionally and structurally and everything else, you can take that same core content and have a fantastic offline experience, have a fantastic online experience. And they may have different objectives to them. They may be aimed at different audiences, but that's the kind of flexibility and adaptability that you have when you're really considering this, you know, online versus offline.
And really focusing on that flexibility and adaptability probably makes the most sense when your score is more in that mid-range, where it was sort of like either format could probably work. That might be the types of offerings where you really want to make sure it is easy to move between the two. Might even suggest perhaps a hybrid approach where some aspects of the learning experience are happening in person, but others are also happening online. So it can be an interesting way to think about sort of the middle ratings. If your scores aren't clearly pointing you towards online or offline, there can be this focus on adaptability and flexibility, and also the potential for a blended solution.
And we should stress, this is not a one and done deal, like just about everything in the world of learning. This is a process, not an event. You need a continuous feedback loop around your portfolio of offerings. So you're going to need to regularly gather and analyze feedback from learners to help you adjust that balance between online and offline and improve your offerings. And, you know, of course, be prepared for those big changes that come along, like we talked about earlier, COVID was.
And then you're also going to need to plan for sustainable investments. So be thinking about what capacity you already have and where you might need to add capacity in terms of online platforms or resources, different staffing needs or different contractor relationships. You just want to make sure that you are in a position to be able to execute on the appropriate formats in your portfolio, and that you're really allocating resources effectively to help you maintain that portfolio that's going to have impact and be balanced and be attractive to the learners you want to serve.
Finding the right balance of online and offline learning to have in its portfolio is one of the critical concerns facing learning businesses in our post-pandemic world, because getting that mix as close to ideal as possible is key to securing a learning business's reach, revenue, and impact.
At leadinglearning.com/episode415, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet subscribed, please do take a moment to do that.
And we'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. So Lisa and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange with a colleague or through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode415, you'll find a link to connect with us on LinkedIn.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.